If you felt stuck trying to lose weight, you're not alone. Enter Weight Loss by Hers. It's designed to support you in reaching your goals. And Hers now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill and the Wegovy pen. With Wegovy at Hers, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first GLP-1 available in a pill, so there are no needles needed. Everything is 100% online through Hers. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door, no insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Weight Loss by Hers goes beyond medication by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and tons of in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hers makes it simple to find an approach that fits your needs and your budget, if eligible. You'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Ready to reach your goals? Visit forhers.com/women to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/women. forhers.com/women. Weight loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit forhers.com.
They had to climb through cow manure, then were stuck in a limo for hours, drenched in cow manure. It was around like 22 hours of surgery that these people had to go through. And then on top of after going through surgery for your entire body, they then had to go to the gym and work out with bandages.
So at the end of the day, you're saying the contestants ended up feeling like it was way overboard?
Yeah, one woman said that her breast implant actually exploded.
I love reality TV.
The Swan, The Real Housewives. Explain Kid Nation. I don't remember that reality show.
Yeah, Kid Nation was one season for very obvious reasons.
How hard was it to get people in every episode, not just the housewives, access to them and have them really speak on the record to you? What do you think is the most harmful myth reality TV perpetuates about success and happiness?
That's a really good question.
Welcome back, everybody, to Misunderstood. I'm your host, Rachel Yucatel. I want to thank you for always being such a loyal follower, listener. Please do me a favor. Stop what you're doing. Go on to Apple or Spotify, whatever you're listening to this on, and write a quick review. Give us 5 stars. It helps us climb the charts. And I really appreciate it because it helps other people find us when they haven't found us before. So I'm excited about this episode. In today's episode, we are joined by Megan Payne. She's the visionary executive producer behind Vice TV's powerful new series, The Dark Side of Reality TV. Megan gives us an inside look at the making of this eye-opening show, which delves deep into the hidden struggles and ethical dilemmas that often go unseen in the world of reality television. Together, we break down the episodes individually, exploring the stories, choices, and revelations that make each one unique. Some of the TV shows she covers are the following: Kid Nation, Joe Millionaire, The Surreal Life, Extreme Makeover, The Swan, Toddlers and Tiaras, Survivor, and everybody's favorite, The Real Housewives. Megan shares her biggest takeaways from producing the series, what drew her to explore the darker aspects of the industry, and impacts she hopes the dark side of reality TV will have on viewers. Join us for an insightful conversation today with Megan Payne as we uncover the real stories behind the glitz and glamour of reality TV. Megan, thank you so much for joining me today on Misunderstood. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited.
Of, Of course, this is such a fun show. And well, I mean, I guess we're talking about the dark side of things, but it is something that I feel like people have been wanting to see for a long time. It's something that people have been talking about with this reality reckoning stuff in the news and pop culture. So it's really fun to have a show out that actually breaks shows down that you guys have highlighted to see what really went on behind the scenes. So super cool. What initially drew you to this project? What made you want to do it?
I would say because I'm an audience of reality TV, that was why I wanted it. I've always wanted a show that goes behind it. There's been scripted series like Unreal, but there was never an actually kind of intrusive look at reality TV and what happens behind the scenes. And so that was what I was really hoping to come across with this show. And our team, we have Dark Side of franchise, and this was something that I really wanted to do, and the team was really excited about it, and it fits really nicely with our franchise. And so reality kind of just felt like the next one.
Was there one show in particular that you had been watching that inspired you?
I would say Real Housewives. I was a day one fan, and I always kind of wanted to understand what went into it, how the casting went, and how the talent actually really felt behind the scenes. That was the show that I would say really kind of got me into it. And I would also say Survivor. I was definitely a Survivor fan from the beginning, and I wanted to know like what is it really like to be on an island for 39 days with no food and all these new people that you've never met before.
Right. So the series has, was it 10 episodes?
10, yeah.
Okay. And how did you pick the 10 that you cover?
It was very hard. Everyone wanted their favorite season. Everyone wanted to know the behind the scenes of their favorite show. But what I call it is kind of the like golden era of reality TV. It was before social media was really big. It was before, public opinion, and people were really like raw in themselves, and they weren't in the comments, and they weren't trying to figure out, okay, what's my storyline? And it was before reality TV was like people understood it. And you'll see kind of with the first season of Survivor, they were trying to figure out what the show was even going to be. They didn't know until kind of the episode actually aired. And so that's what I really wanted to pick the shows that kind of defined reality TV.
So for people that are listening that have not caught on to this yet, it's on Vice TV Tuesdays at 9 o'clock. You have two episodes left that you can catch. What are the two episodes that have not come out yet?
So we have Toddlers and Tiaras that's airing on Tuesday, November 12th. And then we have America's Next Top Model, which is following the next Tuesday.
Okay. And for people that have missed the other eight episodes, is it streaming? How do they catch that on Vice?
So all the episodes are on vicetv.com. If you have a cable subscription, you can log in that way. We also have a Vice TV channel finder as well on our vicetv.com.
Okay. So I want to go through the first eight so we can kind of like talk about them really quickly and then a little bit into what we're going to ho hopefully see in the next two. But I'm curious what was kind of the overall thought process that directors and people involved on the side of making it production had. And then I want to hear what the overall thought was from people that experienced it as a person on the show.
Totally. I would say from a production side, we wanted a level of care for the people that we were talking to. These are really raw moments that that was captured for their life, and we wanted to make sure they were never taken out of context. There's a big thing with it's called Frankenbiting, where editors will kind of make it sound like you said something or made it sound like you were in a different situation than you actually were. And
Oh.
so going into it, that was something that we really wanted to make sure that there was a level of care for our talent that was coming in. Vicki Gunvalson, for example, like she was saying that there was a scene that happened to her that she didn't necessarily want to happen. And so that was something that when we were going through the episode and what we talked about and the stories, we really wanted to get everything right. And this is a lot of their first time speaking on camera and about the things that they went through. And so that was a really big thing for us to kind of keep in the back of our mind. Creative wise and kind of just for our audiences, our audience knows when we're not telling the full truth. And so for us, it was like, we really want to get down to it. Like, how did you feel in that moment? you know, what was really going on behind the scenes. For Survivor, we talked to Richard Hatch, the first winner of Survivor, and kind of Kelly Wigglesworth, who was the runner up and you know, self-proclaimed his nemesis. And we really go into kind of their relationship on the show, after the show, how she felt about when he went to prison. And, you know, he goes into how he thinks that the producers were helping her with giving her food. And so, you know, what we really wanted to get into that nitty-gritty in those relationships and get really deep into it, because our audience, that's what our audience wants. And that's the care for our audience.
Right. Oh, I'm going to have to go back and watch that one. Wait, what happened to Richard Hatch?
So Richard Hatch, allegedly, he said that when he saw the producer giving food to Kelly Wigglesworth, he went to the creator of the show and said, "Hey, this is not okay. This is not what I signed up for." And the creator of the show allegedly told him that if he kept his mouth shut and made it all the way to the end, that he didn't have to pay taxes on the $1 million. And
what?
Yes, I think everyone in reality TV that's on, you know, a contestant show is like, "Excuse me?" And, you know, all of our contestants that we interviewed said, "No, we knew we had to pay that money." But anyway, so he claimed that he did not have to pay the taxes. And then, you know, naturally, when he didn't end up paying the taxes, the government came after him. And that's why he went to prison.
And I'm curious, is he like bankrupt now? Like, what does he do for a living?
So he's still in reality TV. He still loves reality TV. Yep, he's still appearing in shows. I think he enjoys kind of the logistical side of being on reality TV. I mean, he's America's kind of first villain, if you will. And
for
so
sure.
He found something that worked for him, and he's still doing it.
Right. What's the most ethically questionable moment you encountered from reality TV behind the scenes? Do you have one?
Oh, that's a good question. I mean, I would say, and I think this is a tactic that producers will do, and I get it, it's for story, but we were talking to America's Next Top Model contestant Lisa, and she was saying how she had told a producer about a really traumatic event that had happened to her with her grandmother, you know, losing the ability to use her bowels. And there was a very big thing that happened in a bathroom with her. And the, you know, this was something she had told them in her interview, her casting interview. And one of the competitions that the models had to do, which again, this is a modeling competition, they had to climb through cow manure and then were stuck in a limo for hours, like drenched in cow manure. And Lisa was saying in her interview to us, "You can see there's a moment on my face where I remember, oh my gosh, I told the producers that something had happened, you know, manure, that stuff. And I had told producers that, and they used that to make me uncomfortable and put me in this very vulnerable situation." And I think there is actually talked a lot when it comes to Bachelor and Bachelorette, where producers will kind of stick with you for hours on end, and you'll tell them kind of your deepest, darkest secrets. And they use that when it comes to competitions or keeping the relationship going. And on America's Next Top Model, they didn't shy away from that either.
Right. Unbelievable. Okay. Did any participants reveal that they had lasting psychological effects after you spoke to all of these people?
Yeah, there was Sarah actually from America's Next Top Model. She was saying, so she went on and Tyra had said, "Hey, you'll be casted, but you will be a plus size model." And during the kind of makeover or tie overs, as they were called, she had all of her hair cut off. She said she had homeschool girl length hair. And they gave her, you know, very short pixie cut. And throughout the interviews and the challenges, everyone had asked her, like, "Do you feel, you know, bigger? Do you feel like you look like a boy?" And she was like, "You know, I never thought about that," but she was like, "I do now." And I think it's something that in these interviews, you're talking to producers for hours on end, and they're kind of asking you, "How do you feel about your body? How do you feel about your hair? How do you feel about this?" And she said, "After the show, that's all I think about now."
Right. Oh, wow. Okay. Let's go through some of the shows that you did cover. The Swan.
The Swan. It's so funny.
I used to be obsessed with that show, by the way. What year was that on?
Oh, that was early 2000s. I I'm probably gonna forget, but I think it's 2001 or 2004.
And how many seasons did it have? Do you know?
So it was actually, so it's only two seasons. And for,
Because it was so terrible for
yeah,
people
it's
involved, because
just,
for people to watch, it was pretty
I
unbelievable.
mean, it was around like 22 hours of surgery that these people had to go through. And then on top of after going through surgery for your entire body, they then had to go to the gym and work out with bandages. And you still have internal bleeding from that. And one of we talked to he was a coach that would help them work out. He was saying how he was nervous that someone was just gonna, just bleed out while he was working out with them. It's
Oh my
it
God.
was yeah, it was
So
crazy.
you're saying the underlying thing there was that it was not healthy. It was not probably the way that people should have done things. For people that are listening that don't know that show, it was fantastic to watch because it was a new big reality show where they take these people who feel that they are ugly ducklings, basically. And for whatever, they have some sort of deformity on their face, or they're maybe overweight, or whatever it was that they didn't like about themselves. And they get every kind of makeover from plastic surgery to new hair to nails to what else? I mean,
New
basically, they're
body,
getting
tummy
new.
tuck.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. New body, sorry. And then new clothing. And then they show up and their families, they do this like reveal and the. I mean, I remember crying, like watching people's reaction, being like, oh my God, that's so amazing. And the husbands or the wives are like, who is this person? It's not who I married. But so at the end of the day, you're saying the contestants ended up feeling like it was way overboard.
Yeah, one woman said that her breast implant actually exploded and she had to go get that redone after the fact, and she ended up having to pay for it herself. And I there's lasting impressions that like happen when you go through all this surgery that at the time probably felt like a great idea. I'm on this show, it's going to look great. And then after the fact, you're like, that's not me, or that's not what I wanted. And the crazy part about the Swan is that not only are you kind of told you're not beautiful and that you need to look this certain way, and then you finally get to do the reveal, you then actually get picked for a pageant like ending. And so you actually are put up against another woman, and they choose the one that looks better or did the most to themselves to then go to this final competition
Right.
where the final swan is chosen. So you're not even considered a swan until this final competition that happens at the end of the episode.
Right. Okay, so that is kind of terrible.
Yeah, just a little bit, yeah.
Okay. Explain Kid Nation. I didn't know what that I don't remember that reality show.
Yeah, Kid Nation was one season, and for very obvious reasons, it was 40 kids, ranging from 8 to about 14, I believe. That it was very similar to Survivor, where they're dropped in the middle of nowhere, and it was kind of this like old,
Like
like
Lord of the
cowboy.
Flies type thing.
Yeah,
Yeah.
essentially, yeah, but they're in like a cowboy-esque town. And the kids are kind of there to make their own society. And similar to Survivor, they'll have competitions where they have to earn whether it's like food or they earn different like trinkets to have or whatever it is, and creature comforts. And then they sleep in these lean-tos essentially on the floor. The mattresses were like razor thin. And production was saying that they would give them, I believe it was breakfast, but then lunch and dinner was on them. And these kids, I mean, I don't know about you, but I didn't know how to cook at 8. And
No, of
so
course not.
having to cook your own meals and do all of this stuff at such a young age, it was very jarring. And one of the parents had said, I work for CPS and I take kids out of this situation, and I actually put my kid in this situation when the parents actually came and saw what was going on. It was
Oh,
pretty
wow.
crazy.
Wow. Okay, that's interesting. Joe Millionaire, I remember that one. Basically, I think it's like 20 women are vying for this one guy's attention. They think he's obviously a millionaire because of the name of it. And then I think they find out at the very end that they can either take the money that is being offered by the network or choose love. It's like for love or money, kind of, right? And then you find out he's poor. Am I getting that right?
Yeah, so at the end he chooses who he wants to marry. And then once all the other women leave, he discloses that I'm actually not a millionaire. And so she finds out about that. And then,
What was he? I forget. He was like a construction worker or
yeah, he was
something.
a construction worker. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. The average Joe is what they kept calling him.
Right.
And he throughout the whole thing, there's a lot of kind of off camera moments where he's just like, in his mind, he's like, I can't do this anymore. Like, I can't hold this secret anymore. And so that was kind of the biggest reveal during the show, was that the women obviously had no idea this was happening. And so they were saying that they made them look like gold diggers, because this whole time they're like, I'm here for the money, this is what I want, all this stuff. And the women were like, that's not what I thought at all. I was told that he was this, and I'm allowed to talk about it if that's what you're telling me.
Right.
And that was also, that was one season, and then they actually recently brought it back. I believe it was 2021. I could be wrong. But they brought it back where they now have two men. One is a millionaire and one isn't. And so you find out at the end whether you pick the millionaire or not.
Right. I remember starting to watch that. And what ended up happening? The one did the woman pick him, the
Yeah, so
million?
they decided to stay to well, in the moment they decided to stay together, and then they were actually given $1 million together.
Oh.
But she said the second they got back to the US, it was over. He did his own press tour, went on Playboy, like everything, and
Oh.
she was like,
Well, I
no.
mean, there's something to be said for that too. Like, I was on the Millionaire Matchmaker, and they do so much to like push you together. And the second the cameras are off, you're like, okay, whatever, this
That's
is it.
that, yeah. I feel like a lot of the dating shows, it's like once the cameras are gone, it's like, wait, where is this relationship going?
Yeah. But also, I will say there, I was just, I was interviewing Johnny Bananas yesterday, and we were talking about how there is this kind of trauma bond that goes on when you're filming with someone for so long and you're bonded to them, and you can spark this amazing relationship with someone, but because it works there, you're friends with the same people, you're doing the same things every day, your routine's the same, but the second that you leave, you have nothing in common, and your lives don't match up at all. So there's a lot of like elements that kind of make it not work.
Yeah, that makes
Okay.
sense.
Do a couple more. Let's see, The Surreal Life. It's so which one was that? That's like
The
where a
Real
bunch of
Life.
celebrities get together or no?
Yeah. So this was like the first time, it was basically the real world, but with celebrities.
Oh,
And they
right.
didn't have any of their, makeup or assistants or anyone around. And so it was
Oh,
kind of
God
just like,
forbid. Yeah.
yeah. Real and raw. And I mean, these housewives, they'll fly in their hair and makeup overseas whenever they do the traveling and stuff.
Yeah.
And so it's funny watching The Surreal Life now back. And yeah, The Surreal Life was such an awesome experience, experiment, with celebrities. And the season that kind of just like blew up everything was with Dave Coulier and Flava Flav. And that's when Flava Flav and Brigitte started their what they call a strange romance. They started their own show with strange, I think it was Strange Romance.
Now, do you think that that was a real romance?
I actually do. I think they
Strange.
weirdly worked together. I think they were both very like, ex like ex you know, excited about life and crazy and fun, and did their own thing. And Dave Coulier and Flava Flav were rooming together at the time. And he said that he was so frustrated because Brigitte kind of came in on their bromance. And so he had to take his own bed out of their room and sleep in the closet next to the bathroom for the rest of the season.
If you felt stuck trying to lose weight, you're not alone. Enter Weight Loss by Hers. It's designed to support you in reaching your goals. And Hers now offers access to an affordable range of FDA-approved GLP-1 medications, including the Wegovy pill and the Wegovy pen. With Wegovy at Hers, lose up to 20% or more of your body weight when combined with diet and exercise. It helps you regulate your appetite, eat less, and keep weight off. Plus, Wegovy is the first GLP-1 available in a pill, so there are no needles needed. Everything is 100% online through Hers. You'll connect with a licensed provider who will determine if treatment is right for you. If prescribed, your medication is delivered right to your door, no insurance necessary. And it doesn't stop there. Weight Loss by Hers goes beyond medication by offering access to 24/7 messaging with your care team and tons of in-app lifestyle and nutrition tips like recipes, meal plans, fitness videos, sleep content, and more. Even better, with a range of affordable GLP-1 options, Hers makes it simple to find an approach that fits your needs and your budget, if eligible. You'll get a treatment plan personalized to you and unlimited dosage changes as needed. It's weight loss designed to work with your life. Ready to reach your goals?
Visit forhers.com/women to get personalized, affordable care that gets you. That's forhers.com/women. forhers.com/women. Weight loss by Hers is not available in all 50 states. Wegovy is the registered trademark of Novo Nordisk AS. To get started and learn more, including important safety information, Wegovy clinical study information, and restrictions, visit forhers.com.
Oh my God. I love it. Okay. One that everyone's going to want to hear about is you cover in a full episode, The Real Housewives. What did you cover and what did you, you know, discover?
Yeah. So we started right at the beginning. We talked about Orange County. We have Gina Keogh on and kind of talking about the beginning of it where she was like, yeah, it was just, they were following my life as a realtor in this very coveted area of Orange County. And she brought in her friends, one of them being Vicki Gunvalson, which I think everyone knows who Vicki Gunvalson is. And the show kind of took off from there. Season one was very kind of run of the mill. It was like, this is my life and this is what we're going through. And season two really started to pick up and they started to realize, okay, if something dramatic happens, if Tamra Judge throws wine on Gina, viewers are going to want to keep watching that over and over again. And they're going to want to see how this relationship plays out. And so they really started to kind of lean more into the fights and the dynamics between the friends versus just the home life. Because originally it was really like, what's behind these gates and these families.
Did you find out that like people were getting paid more, keeping a contract longer if they were acting that way?
They did say they would get a bump. Cynthia Bailey says, you know, I would get in a fight and then I was able to buy a really nice necklace after. So, you know, it did sound like, you know, and this is kind of coming from them is it did sound like if they were kind of willing to share more or do more, this was something, you know, maybe you get pushed to the center of the key art in the title. And so it definitely sounded like it was encouraged, to keep that going.
And how hard was it to get access? Cause I feel like, I mean, I know Vicki is just a friend of this season, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Right.
So yeah. I guess she was able to talk because she's not on Bravo, but like, how hard was it to get people in every episode, not just the Housewives, access to them and have them really speak on the record to you?
Yeah. I would say years ago, it would have been very hard. Now, because NDAs have come up, and now that the reality TV reckoning happened, I think reality stars are realizing like, hey, I have a voice and I actually can use it. And I think for a very long time, they didn't feel that way. And so I would say if we produced a show 10 years ago, no one would talk to us. But mm-hmm. now because social media has given a voice to everyone, YouTube has given a voice to everyone, they feel a little bit more apt to come and talk. And so we had a list of people, you know, Richard Hatch, Kelly Wigglesworth, Vicki Gunvalson, and we got everyone that we really wanted to go out to. There was no stone unturned in sense of talent that we wanted. And also it was the stories that they were telling us too were so real and so raw. And Aviva Dresser as well from Real Housewives of New York City, she came on and kind of was telling us that she felt like she was forced to drink on set. And so, you know, again, I don't think people would have told these stories 10 years ago, but I think people understand I have a voice now and I can use it.
Right. So in doing your research and doing these interviews, do you feel like what came up with that whole reality reckoning thing was accurate for the most part of all these shows?
Yeah, I do feel like it was accurate. I mean, I think it's hard because I think, you know, I'm not in the contracts. I don't know exactly what they sign up for, but it does sound like going into it, you kind of know what you're getting into, but until you're really in front of that camera with your family or with your friends, you don't really know what you signed up for. And I think that's kind of the second half of it is that level of care and level of, well, I said this, but you turned it this way. And now I don't have any agency over changing the, you know, it back to that. And, you know, we're seeing that with the Love is Blind set. A lot of things came out about what they were going on behind the closed doors and not being able to sleep and all of that. And so I think it's also a level of care just for the talent that's kind of sharing their life that came out of the reality TV reckoning that I do think needs to be looked at.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think, you know, different reality shows can produce different results, right? So like I was on Celebrity Rehab and it was three weeks where there was nothing that didn't happen in real life that happened when they edited it. And people always talk to me about what it was like to be on a reality show. And then I've done some other ones too. But that to me was so real. And I kept saying to people, listen, if you don't say anything stupid or you don't act stupid, they can't act, you know, they can't edit you to be someone you're completely not. So you have to have a little bit of responsibility for how you behave. But I do think that the times have gotten to be where people are more apt to be willing, whether it's for the paycheck or the fame or whatever it is, to act a certain way to get attention. Because I have seen numerous amounts of times people behaving in ways that I don't think they really ever would if the cameras weren't on. And I don't know if that goes into the reality reckoning of whether they blame someone else for their behavior, but I do think you have to take responsibility for your behavior.
No, I agree with you. And I think it's a balance of like the, you know, environment that you're in and exactly what you're saying, where it's like, I feel like I have to do this, you know, so I continue this awesome job that I have. But then it's also like, well, if you're going to do that, it's going to be on camera. You know, they're going to follow you into that.
Right. It's different than, did you ever see the documentary on the college kids that were put into prison cells?
Yes.
For like a week or 3 days and how they ended up reacting?
Oh,
I think that's fascinating because that's people that totally change their behavior because of the scenario they're in. And it shows that you do change, like just with cameras rolling, not because they're being paid. It was a complete experiment. Everybody changed. And I find that fascinating. I think there's a little bit of that in reality show TV and making it.
Oh, I 100% agree with you. And I think Survivor actually is probably one of the best examples of that is, and what I like about Survivor is it really strips you of everything. And whether you watch it on social, like you watch everyone on social media that came off of Survivor and you plan the way that you want to be, until you're on that island and you don't have your creature comforts and you don't have kind of, you know, food and all this kind of stuff, you do have to kind of start being yourself without the camera, you know, without thinking about the cameras. And I think shows like that will continue to survive because it does take you out of your comfort zone and you're not able to plan everything that you want to say. Right. And all of that, and look at the comments and social media and all of that.
Right. Did you find that there were any specific reality shows that were resisted exposing the dark side stories? Like people just did not want to talk at all.
We specifically went after shows that we felt like people, you know, would have a story and had already started kind of coming out. I would say for the first season, we haven't seen anything.
Right. Okay. You guys going to have a second season?
I hope so.
I hope you do Love is Blind. I want to hear.
That is at the top of everyone's list. That is at the top of mine.
Good. And then I guess there's not that much drama on Traitors, but I'm curious, like, I love that show.
Traitors is great. I think I love the competition aspect of it, but then I love kind of the added Survivor-esque, blindsides and going in dark corners and talking about things. Like I love all of that. And I loved when they started putting people from Survivor on Traitors. I thought that was such a good idea.
Yeah. So good. What do you think is the most harmful myth reality TV perpetuates about success and happiness?
That's a really good question. I think this goes back to the drama and perpetuating all this drama to kind of continue a storyline. And I think that's something that I hear a lot of people talk about. I can't believe you watch Real Housewives. Like there's so much drama in it. And it's like, well, that's why we're drawn in and that's why we keep watching. But I think that's something that you don't have to be successful by creating drama and stepping on people to get where you need to get. But I think that world has kind of made it like that.
Right. Okay. So next week we have Toddlers and Tiaras. Can you give us a little inside scoop about what we're going to see?
Yeah. Toddlers and Tiaras. It's funny. I watched it and I always thought it was about the toddlers and this crazy life, but what I really saw is it's about the mothers. And it's really about how they want to portray themselves through their daughters that are on stage and as well as the stage dads, too. And so we really focused on the mothers, and how they worked with their children. This one, mother-daughter duo, she was talking about how she had a lot of issues with weight and eating when she was growing up. And so when her daughter Everose was on Toddlers and Tiaras, like she also kind of would be like, hey, like maybe we don't drink that, or maybe we'll drink a Diet Coke instead. And she, Everose, was talking about how she now can't eat in front of people because of the show and because
Oh.
of this thing that she had with her mother. Her mother's passed with this. And, you know, I thought that was really interesting, kind of seeing that dynamic between them. And I don't think I really realized it at the time, but after watching it now and listening to these interviews, I realize how much the show was about the mothers versus the daughters.
Is that the one that Mama June was on? Is that her name?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Honey Boo
Honey Boo Boo. Did you
Boo.
guys talk to them?
We did not talk to them. Because we wanted to really focus on the first season of the show and kind
Oh.
of really where it came from, because they came in, I believe it was season six. We do go into it, and there's this thing that they called pageant crack, which was like a Mountain Dew mixed with a pixie stick and all the sugar and caffeine that you could possibly fit into something. And that was really kind of derived from them. And you know, their dynamic was ridiculous and amazing. But a lot of the pageant moms would give just straight sugar to their kid. This one woman says, "Straight sugar for straight energy." It's like,
Oh my goodness.
oh my God, I can't imagine just like, you know, sucking down sugar and then going off.
I've had her on the show before, and I was surprised at how, she's so ironic because she's so, like who you see her on TV as, but she's also quite smart. I mean, she's made a
Oh, for sure.
career out of being a reality star, which is not easy to do. Not a lot of people are able to do that. They're on one show and then they're, that's over. And then they've got to figure out if they're going to get a real job or what. And they end up being like Uber drivers because they are like addicted to the fame and the money that you get so quickly. And then it's like hard for them to like do a 9-to-5 job and they can't figure it out and their life really ends up going downhill. So, it's been interesting to talk to people like a Johnny Bananas who's made a career out of being on these shows, 24 different seasons on The Challenge alone, versus someone like Eric Nies, who's known as the OG of the real world. Yeah. Who
Really,
also did the show, who now lives in Hawaii and teach and leads people on ayahuasca journeys. Has totally left because it changed him so much and he needed to get away from that and find himself. So, and tried to commit suicide. He's open about this, so I'm not sharing anything. But, so it's like you see the gamut of how people go and it's two different paths. They either make a career out of it or they have to get away from it because it was too painful. And I guess there's people in the middle that really end up choosing a family and choosing, the private life over the public life. So it is interesting. So it's a great concept you guys have come up with. I can't wait to see what you have in season two. And then quickly, your guys' finale is America's Next Top Model. Who's the one that hosted that? Was that
Tyra Banks.
oh,
The
okay. So
fame, the
did a
famous.
lot of people have a problem with her?
Well, it was interesting. And the reason I really wanted to do an episode on America's Next Top Model was because during the pandemic, when all of the episodes were uploaded, everyone was binge watching America's Next Top Model. And, you know, I watched it when I was younger, and this was really before body positivity was a big thing. And we really kind of like looked at what we were talking about when it came to women's bodies. And everyone on TikTok was just like, why are we okay with this? We're poking and prodding women. You know, for their bodies, you're too skinny, you're too fat, you're too this, you're too that. And that was something that was really big when we were talking to our contestants of like, how did you feel? And I mentioned earlier that Sarah was saying, you know, these were things I never would have thought about. I loved my body. I felt great in my skin. And then after this show, all I think about is kind of, you know, is, you know, does my hair work with my body, or you know, food. And what was really crazy too about her story is that she went on as a plus size model. And because they weren't eating a lot, they were living in these like model apartments, and she said they got kind of next to nothing for money. And so they were eating ramen and, you know, probably not like great food, but they weren't eating a lot of it. And she said that she lost weight so much so that they cut her because she wasn't a plus size model anymore.
Oh, wow.
And I thought that was, you know, so, you know, for lack of better words, interesting that, you know, the reason she got on was because she was plus size, and then the reason she got cut was because she didn't have, you know, enough weight anymore. And they were saying, you know, you're not skinny enough to be a model, but you're not big enough to be a plus size model. And that to me was just so jarring. And you know, when you really kind of dig deep into that.
Right. Okay, my last question. Are there any insights you uncovered that changed your own views on reality TV, or what was your takeaway after doing this season?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's how much people put into it. I think it looks like, oh, you just film for 3 hours and then you go on with your life. And it's like reality TV becomes your life. And as you mentioned as well, it's like, after reality TV is, your show's done or and the cameras go away, it's like, okay, what are you left with? It's either, you continue with reality TV or you create a brand. And I think a lot of the stars that are successful created a brand out of it and were able to kind of capitalize it, whether, it's a drink or it's a jewelry line or whatever it is. Like I think that was like such a big thing that I realized that it is their whole life, and you have to kind of fit. It's almost like you have to figure out your identity after you were on that show, and kind of like
Absolutely.
how you continue that on. And so that was a big thing for me, as an audience member too of this show and reality TV.
Right. Do you have any current projects coming up besides season two or things that are on your bucket list that you definitely want to try and get out there?
Yeah, so hopefully our audience keeps showing up, and we do get a season two. We have a second season of we have the show called United Gangs of America. It's a little departure from this, but it looks as ga at gangs as other Fortune 500 companies. So we're really excited about that.
Wow.
And then adjacent to that, we have a lot of sports programming that's coming up. I unfortunately can't say some of the titles, but we have some really good ones, which. I look at sports and reality TV very similarly because I think there's a lot of rivalries, there's a lot of competition, and I think that audience, it's funny because I'll watch reality TV and then I'll switch and watch soccer or football, and there is a lot of similarities between the two.
Right. Okay, guys, The Dark Side of Reality TV. It airs Tuesdays, 9 p.m. on Vice TV. There's two episodes left. And if you've missed them, you can go to vicetv.com. Did I get that right?
Yep.
And check out the eight other episodes that you've missed. If people want to reach out to you, how could they find you or get more information on this?
Yeah, so you can definitely vicetv.com, and all of our socials. We're very active on our socials. So if you can't find the show or you want more questions, always go to Vice TV on Instagram and TikTok and all the things, and we can get back.
Amazing, Megan. Thank you so much. Good luck to you. We'll have you on for season two, and I can't wait to see what you uncover about Love is Blind.
Thank you so much. This is great. I love
Okay.
talking about all this.
Me too. Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to Misunderstood. I'm your host, Rachel Yucatel. Please be sure to subscribe to the show and give us a 5-star rating and review. You can support the show by joining our Patreon at patreon.com/misunderstood with Rachel Yucatel. Do you have ideas for the show or want to reach out? Email us at infomisunderstoodpodcast@gmail.com. That's spelled MISS understood. Thank you so much, and I'll see you next time.